Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake and Stacy is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. As a reminder, you can watch Jake and Stacy live on 710sports.com/video. You can also listen to past podcasts there. If you're not a big podcast person, don't download them anywhere. You can just stream online as well, 710sports.com/podcasts. Curtis posed an interesting question to us, Jake, about like how soon is too soon to worry about a team? When do you know if your team is good? For instance, the Packers, Chiefs, and Seahawks are all 1-1, and yet people have very different expectations for where these three teams could end up. All three teams should be pushing for a playoff spot, but the expectations for kind of the variance, right, the floor and ceiling for these teams, I would say is widest for the Seahawks from a national perspective and narrowest for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think a lot of that has to do with their roster. So even though a lot of teams, including really good rosters, have similar records, some teams are going to be easier to figure out much sooner. And some are going to take a minute to kind of warm up, take a minute to kind of figure out how they're going to take form. So the question is, when do you know if your NFL team's good? When do you know? Do you, like the Raiders, read into a 2-0 start and think things are fixed? Or do you like the Seahawks look at 1-1 and think that, you know, this is going to be a season that'll be a letdown or maybe it's too soon? I don't know. Right. So I want to know what you are looking at this early in a season to draw from and what you are still waiting to see, what you're telling people to kind of pause, hit the brakes, wait to see what unfolds here.
Well, the truth is that you really don't know the type of team that you can be fully until the end of the season. Like, that's just the truth in terms of
the end of the season.
Yes. Until I'm talking about in December, January, as you're heading into the playoffs, you will find out the type of team that you have in terms of their realization of can they be a Super Bowl team. And I'm talking about playoff teams. I'm talking about, obviously, the Detroit Lions or someone that's already out of it before the halfway point. You know who those are. I'm talking about the teams that do they have a chance, a realistic chance of being a playoff team versus a Super Bowl team. It's all about how hot you are going into the playoffs. And I have rarely seen, and maybe somebody on the text line can correct me here or give me an example of a team that went in the playoffs very cold or struggling, had injury issues, and then ended up getting to the AFC or NFC championship game. I think that that's difficult. However, in terms of knowing the flaws of your team, knowing the difficulties that you're going to have to overcome, I believe probably about week four, you have a really good sense. So that those are two different measurements. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of changing the question a little bit. I think the realization, can you be a Super Bowl team? How deep can you get to the playoffs? It's marked by who's hot going in.
Yes.
But the struggles or the things that can hold you back, the things that you can hang your hat on, those things, I believe, reveal itself around week four. And the reason why I point to end of season is because you can look at the Seattle Seahawks as of last year. Heading into the first half of the season, oh, this team's a Super Bowl team. Oh, Russell Wilson's going to win the MVP. Like, no question about it. Things changed in the second half of the season. But through early part of the season, you realized some of the flaws that this team had. The sustainability, the question marks about is this offense sustainable when they've never played this style of offense before and you don't have a great run game or an established run game to combat it. Obviously, we saw the issues with the pass rush and what issues you had there in the passing defense. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say that you won't see the flaws revealed. So I think that, you know, those are that's how I would mark it. Does that make sense?
It does. I overall agree with you, though. Here's why I ask. What if flaws reveal themselves that have revealed themselves before? For instance, the offense last year for Seattle fell into trouble when they couldn't attack deep, right? They couldn't convert on third down. That was something that they really, really struggled with last year. What we saw in the second half of this game was an offense that couldn't convert on third down, that couldn't stay on the field. Likewise, what we saw is a defense that gave up 532 yards. Those aren't new problems for this team, which is why I am treating them as two red flags this early in the season. It's why it's really hard for me, even though it's 2 weeks into the season, to just kind of say, well, wait and see what unfolds, because it's not a new trend. Like, for instance, DK Metcalf hasn't had a great start to the season. Literally no part of me is thinking DK Metcalf won't have a good season, because it's not consistent with patterns that we've seen from him over the last 2 years. Meanwhile, allowing 500 plus yards per game is very consistent with how this defense was. Here's the thing.
That's fair.
Not just at the beginning of last year. They struggled with their pass defense throughout the year, including some inconsistencies later in the season, even when the pass rush was taken off.
Well, and that's a great point. And also one of the big questions that you did have was, okay, this defense took off in the second half of the season last year, but how much was that facing the doldrums of the NFL in terms of NFL offenses? You were going up against some of the worst offenses in the NFL at the time. And so was that a product of the defense legitimately getting better or facing weaker opponents? You faced a pretty good offense in the Tennessee Titans in terms of just overall talent and skill. You struggled. You handled a pretty good offense in the Colts. They gave the Rams a run for their money, right? They made a close game out of it. You were able to handle them well. So overall, that's why I believe that although one performance, it does ring the alarm bells, it does sound the alarm bells, it's still hard because you look back at the week one performance and you go, well, okay, that's two different stories there with the defense.
Well, yeah, but how about with the Colts being 0-2 right now? Will you feel as good about a win week one if the Colts don't end up being that great a team?
Well, the Colts scored 24 points on the Rams. I mean, they scored 24 points on a Rams, you know, a good solid defense. I mean, I know one of those was a special teams blunder by the Rams, but they made a close game out of it. So that's my point is I'm not disagreeing with you. I believe it's a huge problem and it's something that needs to get fixed. Was this a matchup issue? And when you face the Minnesota Vikings this week, I think we're going to get our answer. I think we're going to get a definitive answer because you're once again going to go up against one of the league's best running backs in Dalvin Cook. You're again going to go up against two really talented wide receivers in Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. Like, you are going to have that issue and a quarterback in Kirk Cousins who's not a world beater, but he's a good quarterback in this league that is going to force you to earn a victory. So in their building. So this is going to be a definite test for this defense to either gain some confidence here with fans or here we go again. Here we go. This is where this defense, you know, they're picking up where they left off as of last year.
Well, okay, so I'm turning to the text line for this one. 710-710 Mac and Jack's text line. If you ever want to join these conversations, please do. From the 253, our defense allowed 500 yards because our offense couldn't convert on third down repeatedly. This is a symbiotic, really. This is a relationship that goes both ways. There should never be a reason your defense gives up 500 yards.
No, there's
there
no
There should
reason.
Never be a reason there's no, there's that your no defense good gives up. And this is another thing. I feel like people keep turning to God, I could talk about this forever. We have to go. We have to break. I was about to sign
right
up,
now?
But we have to break. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm sorry. We'll get back. You know what? Let's get back into that. We're going to get back into this in a couple minutes. I'm going to tell you a formula with these same mistakes. These same mistakes that another team used to actually make it to a Super Bowl and win. Okay? That's what I'm going to do. It's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Continuing a conversation we were just having about the defense, just because we're going to have the Scott Servais Show. Shannon Dreher are going to join us at 1:30, so we're flipping things up here, and we're going to go NFL and just finish up this segment really quick. By the way, since we're not doing what I need to know today, you can send in a quick question if you want while we're on the Seahawks conversation.
Oh, man.
What?
I love what I need to know.
Oh, God, I thought something big happened. It's like when people gasp and you're like, what, what? And then they're like, oh, I forgot my water
bottle. Something
big
did happen. We don't get to answer questions.
I think what you mean is something big did happen. Shannon Dreher is going to be on with us.
Well, true.
You need to flip it.
Yes.
Flip the positive script.
That is very, very true.
I was answering a question from someone saying, well, the defense needed to get off the field. The defense gave up 500 plus yards because the offense didn't sustain drives. Part of that is true. The offense needs to sustain drives, and no successful offense is going to get to a Super Bowl converting like 30% of their third down attempts. That's just not going to happen. If you go look at third down conversions, there is a very strong correlation with teams that make it to an NFC or AFC championship, teams that make it to a Super Bowl, teams that finish up in the top league in scoring, and then also third down conversion percentage. You're a lot closer to 50, which would be leading the league. 50% would be phenomenal. Than you are to 28, to 30%, to 34%, which is around where Seattle was hovering last year. They need to be better there. Even when they were putting up a ton of points, they need to be better there. And when you are not controlling time of possession, your defense will be on the field more. They're going to be gassed, and it'll be tough. All of those things are true. It is also bad football to give up that many yards, to give up 33 points a game, 500-something yards a game. Both of those things need to be, it's a symbiotic relationship. You need to control the time of possession. Also, the defense needs to get off the field. This wasn't just the defense being exhausted. This was the defense committing penalties on second and long or third and long or third down. And even if I don't like a lot of those penalties, and even if I felt like none of those penalties were incredibly egregious, for the taunting penalties one I always point to, but I think Jamal Adams had one in there in week one and this week that I felt like I don't know about that, but it still happened. So I think another thing that always shocks me is like this defense can be better, so there should never be an excuse that's written in just saying like, oh, that's fine, they did what they needed to do. No, this defense has way too much talent to do what they did in the second half of last week's game.
How about you know, the last scoring drive for the Tennessee Titans when they, in regulation, when they tied the game up at 30, their very first play was an offensive holding call. So you had them at first and 20, to your point, Stacey, first and 20, and they convert. They get out of that situation. You don't capitalize on them being significantly behind the sticks, and you give up a 14-yard completion to Derrick Henry on second and 10.
Yeah, I think...
That is self-inflicting, and those are situations that the Tennessee Titans, as they were able to establish all game long, for the majority of the time, you had 12-play drives, you had 12-play drives, you had 8-play drives, 7-play drives. I mean, to your point, these are things that, from a defensive perspective, that, you know, you're also hurting yourself a little bit by not being able to get off the field in third down situations and to be able to help yourself out.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a symbiotic relationship. It's something where the offense needs to contribute to. Russell Wilson and that offense need to convert. They need to stay on the field. They needed to get the run game going more successfully. All of those things are true. And so it reminded me, look, if this is going to be the relationship, if it's going to have to be an offense that scores a ton of points and a defense that just tries to do what they can to limit, what's an example of a team that did so successfully and got to a Super Bowl, right? Like, you're not going to be the top defense in the league, and you better be, with the investments you have, particularly at quarterback, the one of the best offenses in the league. So what's an example of a team that did that? And obviously the one that a lot of you are probably thinking of and one that I immediately went to is the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs, an offense that scored 34 points per game and averaged, by the end of the year, 404 yards per game surrendered to opposing offenses. 400 plus yards surrendered, 34 points per game, got to a Super Bowl and won it. So they did it with that formula, but it's a little more complicated than just those stats. You've also got to make sure that you have something you can hang or lean, Jake, your hat on with defense. And you also have to really consistently just blow teams out of the water on offense. And so both sides of the ball are going to need to be better if that's the formula you want to run.
Right.
And it's going to be really, really hard to do, which is why a lot of things clearly need to change on either side of the ball, because that's really hard to sustain. For instance, Kansas City did that, surrendering 404 yards per game. That defense was also near the top of the league in sacks.
They were.
You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
They got turnovers. They got sacks. They gave up a ton of yards and probably quite a few points. But they managed to get the ball back to Mahomes.
Correct.
And they managed to stop the quarterback and get off the field thanks to sacks.
They had a clear formula. And that's the thing that with the Seahawks right now, I am trying to understand what their formula is. The Chiefs, from a roster construction standpoint, from the top down, were bought into that plan. Stacey, they were okay. It was their plan, their strategic plan, to score high level, at a high clip, offensive-minded head coach, everything was geared around the offense, and then they had the idea that if we're going to get up early and we're going to be able to take advantage of that, we're going to force teams into throwing the football. We may give up yards, but we have a great pass rush, and we have playmakers on the back end where we can take advantage of that with disruptive plays. So everything kind of fed into one another in terms of the design of who they were from, you know, the top down in terms of their roster construction. So I don't quite understand exactly where the Seahawks are at, what exactly they want to be, who they want to be, and what they will be ultimately. Because if you look at this team from Pete Carroll's perspective, after that post-game press conference, after yesterday, you can hear that he wants to be more of a team that, look, you're not going to get you don't want the big explosives on a consistent basis and flip the field or get the ball back to the defense in a short, timely manner, because you want to be able to sustain those long drives, sustain that time of possession, and to be able to keep your defense off the field, which isn't a bad thought process, but does it go to the extent of where you're trying to negate those explosive plays the other way and trying to make it harder on yourself offensively to put points up on the board?
Yeah, it's, again, I think you're right in that it's like their identity isn't the Kansas City Chiefs of 2018, so you've got to find a way to find a formula that works for you while acknowledging that, like, your offense is where the investment is. You're going to have to be better than you are on defense. The defense does have some leeway, but they're going to have to be better too. Like, the reality is that you are going to be a different team, even if you have the strength and weakness on either side of the ball is similar. So it's just, I think that defensively what we're going to need to see more of is turnovers and then the pass rush get better. If you're going to be giving up a ton of yards per game, if that's how you're going to be playing, and that's not going to change probably, we didn't see it change too much last year, you need to get turnovers, you need to get to the quarterback.
But what Coach Carroll would say to that, Stacey, is he would say, of course that's not the design of our defense. We don't want to give up big plays. We don't want to give up over 500 yards on defense. We don't want to give up. We want to be one of the top defenses in the league. And with the Colts, we were able to do that effectively.
If you want to be one of the top defenses in the league, why is anyone getting mad about someone complaining that 500 yards per game is
bad?
No one should. That's what I'm saying. If you want to be one of the best defenses in the league, why on earth are you okay with that?
Right. And I would also, when you're talking about
likewise for offense,
accountability and conversations, I would have loved to have heard a little bit more feistiness when it came to the play of your defense. I heard a little bit more feistiness in terms of the offensive play and philosophy, and that was more of the conversation.
Which was deserved in some ways.
It was. And those topics of conversation need to be had, but I'm saying that I didn't really hear that same level in regards to the defense.
Yeah.
So, what are we hanging our hat on? Is it the offense needs to be this 30-point, you know, explosive show and be one of the best offenses in the NFL and the defense is just going to hang on? Or is this trying to be a very good complementary group?
All right, last half hour of the show is going to be a great one. Scott Service is going to join us for the Scott Service Show, and then we've got Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer. Don't go anywhere.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Driven by Car Pros Kia of Tacoma.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Jake and Stacy is presented exclusively by Car Pros Kia Tacoma. It is the Scott Service Show. The Skip joining us now. Scott, it was a fantastic night, both for your club, Tyler Anderson, and your football team, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Who had a more dominant night? Was it Tyler Anderson with 7 innings, 4 hits and just 1 run allowed, or Aaron with 4 touchdowns?
The game I'm focused on is the one that Tyler Anderson was in, and he was awesome last night. So really good outing for him, probably as sharp as he's been at any point since we acquired him there at the deadline. So he's been on a roll, and we certainly needed it last night.
Scott, it was great to see what Tyler did, and I'm wondering how much of a, obviously he was a known quantity when he was acquired, but has there been extra that you guys didn't know you were getting from him?
Well, I think we had a pretty good idea what kind of pitcher he was. I mean, you never know a guy's personality until you get him over in your clubhouse and in your uniform, but he's been a great fit. Tyler's very well prepared. He's got a good idea, first of all, on who he is. He understands what kind of pitcher he is, and then how to use his stuff, you know, against different lineups in the league. So it's been awesome to see how he's fit in here. And you know, we say that because he's performed at such a high level, and it's been so critical for us to stay in this playoff race, knowing that we're going to give him the ball once every 5 days, and he's going to keep us right in the ball game. And last night he did more than that. You know, he shut down a really good team and, you know, get our offense a chance to get going early in the game, and our bullpen, we hung on because of Paul Sewald again.
You know, those performances like Anderson sometimes go unnoticed. If it's not a flashy guy, you don't see it. But this is kind of a topic that we've kicked around, Gary Hill and I, in the pregame a little bit, and just kind of, I'd be interested to get your philosophy on this. But with the way the game is going, and I know that you would never turn one down, but with the way the bullpens are built and the investment that is being put into them and the way that starting pitching is being used, you can accomplish a lot with a mix, and in the past it's been an ace and four guys afterwards, and I'm really kind of wondering how necessary is a true ace if you're a team that really wants to propel forward?
Well, I think it's one, like you said, you'd never turn down. You know, if you've got, you know, a true ace, how many are there actually in the league right now where you put the guy out there and you know he's just going to shut the other team down? You say all that, and still those guys, you know, hit a bump in the road once in a while as well. But yeah, the quality of your club and the opportunity to stay in a playoff race, you need to have depth. You need to have guys that are going to consistently give you an opportunity to win the ball game when they're out there. They're going to throw strikes. They can change speeds. Hopefully, as they gain experience in the league, that they have the ability to now attack other lineups, so they have more than just one way of getting you out, which happens when guys get more experience. But I'd love the fact that, you know, everybody, there's not a manager alive just doesn't want the, you know, the Max Scherzer to run out there and put together what he's putting together. But I think realistically, teams understand that the game, you know, it's changed a little bit. You know, opportunity to give one top end ace guy and everybody else is like a fifth starter type versus guys that are just going to be very consistent and, you know, always give you a chance to win. I like the depth. You know, you got to have starting pitching. It's been so key for us that we've been very stable with our starting pitching ever since Tyler Anderson joined us, you know, at the trade deadline. And that's what allows you to stay away from a losing streak. It allows you to keep a winning streak going just because you're always in the ballgame.
Skip, along those same lines, in terms of the bullpen and the depth there, I mean, it's been great to see that, but it's also great to see Paul Sewald come back and just be his dominant self at the end of that game versus the A's. I mean, what did you see from him that was encouraging after, you know, not necessarily struggling a lot, but just, you know, having some adversity there in the last couple series?
Yeah, maybe you guys were seeing more adversity than I was. I think Paul's been fantastic all year long. I just know how hard it is in this league to be at, you know, just that top of your game. That you're going to give up hits. You're going to give up a homer here or there. You know, it happens in this league. And I think Paul's just been outstanding all year long. It certainly helped. He had a couple days off before he got in last night's game. And I thought he was really sharp last night. But I think he's been really sharp, you know, the majority of the year. He might have had one or two hiccup outings where, you know, they hit the ball. And then once in a while they square it up and they hit it over the fence. That happens in this league. It happens to the best closers in this league. And, you know, to see what Paul has done this year and how consistent he's been. And last night was, you know, that's him. In a small sample size, he just went right after him. He was attacking the strike zone. Just kind of fearless. Here, go ahead. I dare you to hit my stuff. And when he does that, he's really at his best.
I want to ask a question about Jared Kelnick, who is having maybe his best kind of stretch of the year so far. He's been great in September, and I do want to get to that. But can I ask a very weird pitching decision question? I was thinking about it, Scott, as we were all talking, and I actually think it's something that you've done very well this season. So it's not a critique so much as it's like genuinely a question of if this has ever happened to you. Have you ever gone out, tried to pull a guy, and then he really made his case and was like, I want to stay, I can do this. And then you let him have a chance and he actually pitched himself out of it. And you thought, okay, he made the right call.
No.
Fair. Okay.
You're going to ask a crazy question now. There's times you go out, but when I leave the dugout, I have a pretty good idea where we're headed. No, it doesn't stop me from asking the question or maybe talking about how we're going to pitch that particular hitter and when I know I'm going to leave the pitcher in the game. But no, I think when you get to that point, you have to stay as objective as possible.
Yeah.
And I have never met a pitcher that didn't tell me, I've ever walked out and said, yeah, this is the right call. Here's the ball.
You're right. You're right, Scott. I'm done.
They don't do that. I thought it was actually comical watching the football game the other night when John Harbaugh asked Lamar Jackson, you know, do you want to go for it? Like, of course he's going to go for it. John Harbaugh knows he's going for it. You know what I mean? It was kind of, it made me laugh. Like, what player is going to say, no, coach, we should punt right now?
Yeah, no, I'm not feeling it.
I don't know.
Let's go. Field goal.
Skip, you know, going off of, you know, some of the conversation that's been happening and just the performance that Seager has had up to this point, he comes in through, you know, big for you guys, you know, clearing the bases, having that big hit, bringing in three runs. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Kyle Seager, but, you know, I hate to keep bringing up a similar question to you, but I just think it's important to reiterate, you know, how much has this guy mean to you, especially down the stretch here as you guys are playing these meaningful games?
Yeah, Kyle's had an outstanding season, you know, obviously with the power numbers and driving in runs, no question about it, and the fact that, you know, he plays every day. You know, we gave him a day off in Kansas City the other day, and he needed it. You know, it does happen. These guys keep grinding, and sometimes it's more of a mental break than an actual physical break of having the day off. But he's had a heck of a season. It really has. It's about as productive a season, you know, with the long ball and driving in runs as he's had since he's been a Mariner. And we've needed every one of them, you know. And you know, with Kyle's season, there's been some really hot streaks. There's been some colder streaks. Last night, I thought it was huge. He stepped up, got some big hits for us early in the ball game when we really needed it.
Scott, have you ever hit a ball 460 feet?
No chance. No chance. Maybe a golf ball, but never a baseball. No, what Jake Bowers did over in Kansas City was awesome to see. And it's something that, you know, we've seen it coming. It just hasn't showed up in the game yet. So good for him. He's been working really hard and trying to make a few changes with his swing, and he's in the lineup tonight. Hopefully we see one of those tonight. Doesn't have to go 460. I would be happy if it went 420, you know, whatever. It goes over the fence, we're all good.
Can I ask about Jared now, Scott? I want to go back to Jared.
Sure.
Okay. He has been really great in September. His last 15, 12 RBI, 5 home runs, you know all these numbers. What's been working for him right now?
Jared, I mean, obviously confidence is it's there. He feels, you know, every time, every game he goes into, doesn't really matter who's on the mound. He's, you know, he's got the capability. He's going to have a good at bat. And for me, it comes down to he's swinging at the right pitches. He's also putting the balls in play that he should be. And I think at times this season he's swinging at the right pitches, but all of a sudden you get your pitch and you foul it off. And at the major league level, you're going to get one per at bat. Some days you get two per at bat. At the minor league level, you might get 3 or 4 pitches per at bat. So, you know, when you foul off those pitches you should be getting in play, now you kind of start putting yourself in a hole. We're not seeing that recently. He's squaring balls up. The at-bats have been very good. I'm really happy for him. You know, it's been a struggle early on for him, but he's learned a lot this year. He's learned a lot about, you know, what it takes to play every day at the big league level, what the preparation needs to look like, where the mindset needs to be when you're not going well versus when you're going well. It's really going to benefit him and us here going forward.
These are huge lessons, and one of the things that really intrigues me, Skip, is the process, because it's one of the things that I believe a lot of people overlook and how important that is to not just your pregame routine, but the process in terms of mentally what you're thinking about at the plate, the process in terms of how you're handling these adversities, and some things that, you know, people have noticed is, you know, him tinkering a little bit. What has that process been like to help him kind of settle down and just get him to, you know, focus on working on, you know, certain things and not trying to tinker too much?
Yeah, and players are always going to kind of tinker a little bit, you know. You're going to feel differently. Some days the bat feels heavy, you know, and you got to get started a little bit earlier. Some days you're right on top of it. You feel like you're seeing the ball looks like a beach ball coming in there. So things are always going to vary, and you're going to tinker with your swing a little bit, but I think he's been really consistent. You know, I go back to, you know, his preparation when he walks into the ballpark every day. And those are the things you can control. You cannot control the results, but you can control how you prepare and where your mindset is at, your self-talk, you know, things like that. And he's gotten a lot better with that. And also, you've got to figure out how to deal with failure. There's so much failure in our game. You know, hitting a baseball is really hard. And, you know, and sometimes you do everything right and you don't get a hit. And you have to be okay with being consistent with your process, knowing you're doing everything right, and it's going to turn in your favor. And we're starting to see it turn for Jared, and good for him. Been really good here the last, you know, 3-4 weeks, just day in and day out, and hopefully continues here, you know, as you know, we go down the stretch here in our season. We need him. You know, he had a huge game in Kansas City the other day, and he carried us. You know, between what he and Logan Gilbert did, it was just awesome to see that, you know, two of our younger players in our team actually won the game for us that day. And we need contributions from everybody, and those guys are certainly capable of doing it.
Scott, I want your help on something. In fact, I want to put you in charge of something right here. You know, we're talking about...
Okay.
Yeah, you don't have an option. We're just going to do this. with Jared Kelnick, and obviously everything's a first, and I guess there's some sort of molding of the player going on because this is a first. He is an incredible interview. Be it pregame or be it a postgame debriefing, he is open. He shares the process. It's been, I think, eye-opening, and I think it's been great for the fans to be able to, you know, be let in a little bit. I know last year we talked a lot about the brashness and some of the funny things that he said, but this year, so insightful. That's something that I hope he keeps.
Well, I definitely think it's not going to go away. And it says a lot to him, his character. His ability to put words together and express what he's feeling. You know, I enjoy being around him because when you sit down and you have a one-on-one meeting with JK, you're getting real content back. He's not just sitting there nodding his head and saying, you're right, which is not what you want. It needs to be a back and forth. And he can put words together. He's not afraid to express his opinion and then listen to what you're saying. And it really is, great to see out of a player that is that young. And it's going to serve him well throughout his entire career. And the thing that excites me is that I've always said, you know, to be able to lead and to be a leader, you got to be able to talk. You got to be okay expressing yourself, and then when somebody comes back at you, you know, how do you counter that, or you know, are you really listening to what they're saying? And he's got those abilities. So again, he's a young player; he's learning. But I have listened to a few of those interviews, Shannon. I think he does an incredible job for a guy who's that young to, you know, put his words together and make sure everybody understands what he's thinking, and it all makes sense to me. He's being very honest and open, which is great to see.
He is Mariners manager Scott Servais, Seattle 81-69 with 12 to play. They're in a pivotal four-game series against the A's. You guys are going to want to tune in tonight. First pitch is at 6:40 p.m. where you can see Scott Servais there. Speaking of leadership, trying to lead his guys into the postseason here. Very exciting series we'll all be watching. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem, guys. Thanks. Take care. Appreciate everybody's support.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. Speaking of this series, Shannon, still with us for the final couple minutes of the show here. You're looking at kind of the rest of this series. Look, it is going to be tough for Seattle to get this done. It's still possible. Really, really tough. And I know what a lot of us are really looking at right now is stuff like development, right? What's the decision going to be on Kikuchi? How's Tyler Anderson looking? How's Kelenic looking? I know that's really kind of where our head is at. A lot of hearts are still hoping that they can make this happen. So what's maybe the most important thing that has to happen in this series?
Well, you just continue what you saw yesterday. I thought yesterday, the last 2 days, we've seen really good bounce back. You had that one absolute clunker in Kansas City. And, you know, not only did they lose, they lost. They looked flat in that game. They looked, okay, they're done. You know, that's it. They've kind of looked at the standings and that's it. And they came right back out and propelled by Logan Gilbert, which is exciting. It's exciting what we've seen him do, not just this season, but in particular the last 3-4 weeks. And you see him really kind of build in what he is learning and what he is accomplishing. And what Jared Kelnick has done in the month of September, and you hope that's his starting point. I mean, if that's his starting point next year, that's a great thing. And I'm with Scott saying that, you know, we've been looking, could somebody be of huge impact down the stretch? And of course you want it to be Kelnick. And all of a sudden, you know, you wish it had been a week earlier, but in the big picture, in the big scheme of things, it's important that it happen. And I think it is happening right now. So, you know, keep it going. It was great to get Kyle some rest. It was great to get Paul Sewald some rest. I think it benefited both of them. See how long you can keep that going. They played the A's well all season long. Keep it going.
Pitching probables for this one, by the way, Marco on the mound tonight. Chris Flexen tomorrow. You say Kikuchi to end the series.
You look at, you know, and I hate to point to this, you know, negative aspect. You mentioned that clunker. Well, the guy who was starting in that was Yusei, and it wasn't really a competitive outing from Yusei, and yet you see a complete contrast from somebody like Tyler Anderson. I mean, I hate to talk about the future here a little bit, but it just seems like there's such a big contrast between those two. Like, honestly, Shannon, I'm sitting here and I'm going, as as great a stuff as you say has, I'd rather have Tyler Anderson back next year.
Well, do you want six innings guaranteed, or do you want a flash of stuff every, you know, 15 days?
Give me consistency all day long.
If Yusei could be what he was for those 6 weeks all the time, please sign me up. And we were all saying that at the time. And the difference is Tyler Anderson knows who he is out there. He knows what he's got. He knows what he's dealing with. Kikuchi isn't there. And, you know, part of that is probably because of all the changes that he has made in the last 3 years trying to get to those 6 weeks that we have seen. And it's been a tough go for him. But again, you know, especially if everything else is falling into place, you heard Scott say it's that consistency and being able to, you know, rely and knowing that every day you go out, you've got a shot rather than 2 or 3 days you go out and you know you've got a really good shot. Mm-hmm.
Shannon, heading into next year, and again, I hate to talk about future stuff, but it's relevant.
We're all fighting it.
It's relevant to what's happening right now is that a lot of your contributors, a lot of your runs, a lot of your home runs, these are happening from veteran players, and some of them, Kyle Seager, his future is up in the air with this team. Maybe he comes back. We don't know. But how challenging is that for this team to continue to keep adding from the farm system, yet knowing that they need to add elsewhere this offseason to meld that all together? How difficult of a challenge is that?
I don't think it is. I think they've got a plan and they're ready to go. I mean, that's what Jerry DePoto and crew does. And I think that one of the things, things change as time goes on. I think that you look out right now, and we're getting so far ahead. I said I wouldn't do this.
It's hard not to.
I'm forcing you to do this.
You know, I think that you're looking at areas where you might have need that you didn't know, like you might need a backup center fielder next year. You might, Julio Rodriguez could arrive a lot sooner than expected at the beginning of this year. I mean, a year ago or most of this year, I would have said there's no chance he makes it out of spring training, that they will allow him to make it out of spring training. I am prefacing this with absolutely, you know, I know nothing on this. I do not have inside
kind of
information on this. I think he's going to be allowed to compete in spring training. So, I mean, things change as the season goes on. So is that a challenge in the offseason? No, it's a heck of an opportunity.
What about, you know, going back to the pitching rotation, you're going to have Hancock and Kirby. What are the kind of ETAs we're looking at for those two? And then how might that formula need to come together? Like, hypothetically, would they
need to... We're doing it now.
Hypothetically, will they probably need to go out and get a starter in free agency?
Yes.
Okay.
But they might have one already in house.
Oh, God! So many answers. Okay, I got a different question. Let's look to now then. Let's look to right now. You have a column up on 710sports.com. It's on the front page. Mariners still alive in playoff race, setting up a lot to look forward to. I want you guys to go read this because it's such a great column and there's plenty to look forward to in here. What's one thing fans can look forward to?
Well, I'm talking about we're not supposed to look forward to anything right now. We're supposed to celebrate where they are right now. And
exactly.
It's so tempting because it's been hard not to jump right to it because there is so much. This is going to be one heck of an offseason as far as, you know, baseball and the Mariners go. On the baseball side, the news kind of bad. There's a CBA that's coming up, but there's going to be baseball talk. There's going to be CBA talk. It's going to keep going. It'll be interesting how this all unfolds. On the Mariners side, obviously a huge offseason where they are going to spend this winter. So there will be all of that. And then I also point out, it really hit me hard last week when I went to the press conference for the All-Star game. I was thinking, okay, yeah, we're going up on the roof of the top of the Space Needle. We're raising another flag. We've done this a bunch of times. I wore the shoes to climb the ladder and everything else and get up there.
Climb the ladder.
You have to climb ladders to get on the roof of the Space Needle.
You have to have special shoes for it?
Well, you can't wear, I'm wearing tall boots right now, and you can't do that.
Had to take out the ladder shoes.
Exactly, which you always keep in the back of the car, just in case. You know, I think we've done this before, and when the elevator doors open to the view level of the Space Needle, you saw the entire MLB production crew, and it was like, oh, yeah, this is a big deal. This is one of MLB's jewel events. And, you know, you saw the familiar, you know, the logos and the bunting and the blue that they use on all of their you know, marketing and signage and whatnot. And, yeah, the commissioner was there. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is a pretty big deal. And it's going to be all over Seattle. And it's coming up fast. Usually when they announce an all-star game, it's years and years away. Well, a year from arriving from spring training, coming up this March, that's when they arrive back to Seattle. They're going to see it everywhere. It's not just the ballpark. It's going to be everywhere. So to me, it was like there's so much coming right now. Mariners, baseball, just so much that I think the city will have an opportunity to get excited about. And the idea of the post was, we're not there yet. You've got to take care of what's going on right now.
Well, speaking of taking care of what's going on right now, you have the A's, the Angels. You come back to the A's, you come back to the Angels. How important is it to finish this season, no matter where they end up in the playoff race, to take care of business within your division? What kind of statement would that be for the Mariners?
Well, keep going, because they've been doing a really good job of it this year. And the most important thing, it's in their heads. They've stood up to all of them.
Love it.
Well said, Shannon. She is Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer. You can read her work at 710sports.com. You can also listen to her on the Mariners pre- and post-game show. Pre-game today at 5:30 p.m. First pitch for today's game. It's a really important series, 6:40 p.m. Tune in. It's going to be right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Obviously, you can hear Shannon break down everything post-game. Shannon, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to
wrap up our interview with Scott. She'll be back for next week's Scott Service show as well. This has been Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next.